Welcome to the Global Discussion, discussions with creatives, leaders, and thinkers. My name is Simon Hodgkins. Today, a real pleasure to be joined by Charlie Burney. Charlie, you're very welcome to the show. Let's begin by asking you to give an introduction about everything that you're involved in, because if anybody's in podcasting, you know an awful lot about this space. So over to you, Charlie.
Well, you're very kind, Simon, and thank you for having me. Let's see if I can get to it quickly. I've been podcasting for approximately 11 years now. It's been about 25 plus years in real estate and a whole lot of other things at that time, tourism, golf, et cetera, and got into podcasting. I had been listening for a while, specifically a show called For Immediate Release, which is a gentleman in England and a gentleman in California who do sort of a B2B marketing podcast. Back in those early days, 15 years plus ago, I was listening to it for a month before I understand what they were talking about. And I've always felt that podcasts are a way to learn things, certainly to enjoy things. I listen to music podcasts and all different flavors. I call myself the chief listening officer here at Podville Media, our media company. And that means I try to listen to all, if possible, of the things that we produce and as much of other podcasts, other forms of media as I possibly can consume so that I can make sure that I understand what's going on out there, like any chef testing someone else's cooking. So I started out the normal way. I was listening to Ray Ortega and Pat Flynn talking about how to make a podcast. I had no idea. I'm an amateur musician, so I had a PA system, and I thought, well, that's probably all I need. And that wasn't all you need. That's all you need to make loud noises. So I started out that way, humbly, not really knowing the craft 11 years ago and learning as I went along. It might be interesting for your audience to know sort of where I began and how that came up with the idea of podcasting. I had left the job I had for 26 years and was looking for my next thing, and was offered by them an office by my previous employer, an office in a co-working center. And that was a new term to me 12 years ago. I didn't really know what co-working was. I understood it pretty quickly. I'd been in real estate and I thought, this is a crazy idea. It'll never work. And of course, it has worked and not worked, as we know from many examples in our news today. But I realized quickly on when I was out there making calls and trying to figure out what to do that everybody in that office was different. It wasn't a large insurance company. It wasn't a legal office with 100 people cranking out files. Everyone was doing a different profession. There was a digital brochure, which was news to me then. There was a warehouse academy. There was a talent agency, a film company, a marketing agency, et cetera, et cetera. And finance. We did a finance podcast in the early days. So I decided to do a podcast, not knowing what I could do at that time, and working hard to catch up and figure out how to do it. I had a 4-track solid state Behringer mixer and some old microphones, Shure SM57s from being a amateur musician. And I could tell a long story about how I finally understood what a good microphone can do for oneself, because I didn't figure that out for a few years. And set up a studio and started doing an interview show for the tenants of the co-working space, so that the co-working space in their weekly newsletter would have that interview to put in the newsletter. We weren't looking for anything other than content about the co-working space, so they could offer them a podcast to listen to and learn about the tenants. And then hopefully those tenants, the people who got the interview, would put it, I encouraged a lot then, and I would, if I was still doing that show today, put it on your LinkedIn page, right? Put it on whatever social media you do have. And at that time, it was mostly Facebook, to be honest with you. I started an Instagram account for my podcasting business, which became Podcast Village, which became Podville Media. And we have today 3,000 followers, but which isn't very much, but we don't get business through our Instagram account. It's through mostly our clients and word of mouth based on what we've done here. So I started podcasting. I'm embarrassed to say, Simon, I charged $60 for a show back then. I was just trying to get people in the door. And then one guy came by one day and said, what are you doing? And I talked him into it. And the financial guy that I mentioned out there said, what are you doing? And it just proceeded along that way. I finally met a local podcaster here in the Washington, D.C. area who they had transitioned from what he calls terrestrial radio to a podcasting show. So they had a daily podcast that replaced this sort of four guys talking smack to each other radio show into a podcast. And I'd been listening to that radio show for a very long time. And we got together, and a long story short, we partnered up. And then we took on the name that I had already established, Podcast Village. And then a few years later, when we were trying to get the trademark for that name, and there was some legal battles on that, we both said, look, we're not just doing podcasts anymore, because we had to pivot, as you said, a couple of times in the early days. And we're still pivoting today mostly because of coronavirus. But we had to add video media. And even before I partnered with Oscar, my business partner, we were doing video. I knew next to nothing about video, Simon. I just taught myself audio. So we went into video. Why? I did. And then we did because the clients demanded it and they needed it. And as you know, I think what Tom Webster says is 50% of podcast consumption today is done through video forms, which is an amazing, amazing statistic. So we've evolved. This is our third location. We're actually moving to a new location. There's so much, I won't get into that. There's so much real estate uproar in Washington and in the whole world because of the not return to work, let's say, or the partial return to work. So we're looking at our options. We're actually adding some video capabilities to what we do at this time and pivoting again. Along the way, let's see if I can get to my book. I wrote a simple book. My father was in the hospital, and with a client of ours, Hilda. Hi, Hilda. We wrote a book called Podcasting Made Simple. It's around here somewhere that is still on Amazon, but within a month, the Rodecaster Pro came out and made most of the things that I talked about in that book pretty much no longer needed. No one remembers what a mix-minus setup is anymore because, frankly, Zoom, which we're on today, will give you two tracks, right? And we couldn't do that before, so we had to figure out a way to do that, and that was the mix-minus. And so as soon as I'd written my book and illustrated it, it became slightly invalid. So I vowed if I ever wrote another book, I'd try to make it evergreen. During the coronavirus, again, I may be going on too long, I doodled one day what I call the yin-yang microphone that you see on the cover of this book, because I had studied philosophy and Taoism in college, and it just made sense. And next to that, I scratched the Tao of podcasting. And I went about, as my dad would have said, I went about my business, applying my trade. And then I came back and did a few interpretive verses of the Tao Te Ching into the language and of podcasting. And I showed that 2.5 years ago to two people specifically who encouraged me so much that I went ahead and finished it. And then I'd been drawing, Simon, this whole time. I'm a doodler by trade, and I draw microphones, and I draw the people in the studio, and I draw the mixing boards. I don't know why. And I never had a plan for it. But if you've ever read the Tao Te Ching, it's often accompanied by calligraphy, brush strokes, which is what it was written in originally about, let's say, 3,000 years ago. And I was casting about for calligraphy to put in the book, and I thought this was hard because I couldn't do it, and I wanted to do it by hand. And I thought, well, I got these 100-plus drawings. Why don't I just put them in the book? So it kind of tells, if anyone in the audience is interested, the Tao of Podcasting is available on Amazon. That's a whole nother story, figuring KDP out. And I put my illustrations in there, which sort of tell a second story about my podcasting journey. So we've grown. Oscar and I now work with a whole lot of high-profile clients. We're sort of a high-end production studio, if you'll forgive me for saying that. We do social media content based on the long form. We do so many different clients. One which is very interesting, the White House Historical Association. It's very nonpartisan, but some fascinating, fascinating stories about former presidents and the architecture and the interior of the White House. Absolutely interesting show for anybody who's a history buff. And continue to produce with clients like ESPN and try to make a difference and try to fly our trade as podcasters. And I should probably stop there.
I could listen to you all day, Charlie. And I know you'd let me. It's wonderful. And I love the, just coming back to the illustrations in the book for a second. I love the illustrations, or as they're kindly referred to, the pod sketches, right?
The pod sketches. Thank you. You've gotten it completely here. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, we can see them for people watching it. Yeah, they can see them there. Yeah. And obviously, they need to run off to Amazon as quickly as they can and get a copy. Oh,
please do.
But thanks for taking us through the journey from Podville Podcast Village to Podville Media today.
Yeah.
And it was interesting as you were talking. I was thinking about people starting podcasts today. You know, they might just talk into a smartphone. Then eventually they'll buy a mic, directional mic,
right,
condenser, and, you know, mixers come into it, and then some fancy soundproofing. And then ultimately you end up at the very top podcasters, they end up with a studio, right? So you need that face-to-face studio recording type thing happening. And it's very interesting because you started off saying, look, we were learning, we were sort of low end when we started, but today you're working with really successful brands, really interesting customers and clients.
It's fascinating, truly.
I've had some great discussions with people in the podcast production space over the years, and I've been astounded at, on one hand, it's this media that it's quite cost effective to get into these days compared to what it was years ago. But to produce a proper high-end podcast still costs money, doesn't it?
It does. It does. There's no getting around it. You can do it with a phone, of course, but even with AI, it's going to sound like you did it with a phone. We have, there are several that I listen to that we don't produce that still sound like it's being done in a bathroom. And often, perhaps it is. I spoke to someone who got some advice from me a few years ago, and I finally called her up one day and I said, what are you doing? It sounds awful. Your content is fine. I love you. And she got back to me a day later and she said, I had the microphone turned backwards. And I don't know how she managed to do that. Maybe it was a snowball. I don't know, but it sounded immediately better. But you're absolutely right. What we've discovered is there are clients, and they told us this first, this is such a relief. All I have to do is show up, come, sit down. There's a hot cup of coffee and a bottle of water waiting for me on the table, and I can just do my ideas and do my interviews, do my soliloquies, do whatever it is that show involves. And they don't have to worry about the recording, the levels, the uploading, the lighting, and the social media assets, which is what we call, you know, I'm going to take a minute of our conversation here and turn it into a reel or a TikTok or a YouTube short or. And so that's what we do on our end, and then provide the client with some of the statistics about the downloads and as much as we can create. You know, that's always been an issue in our industry. How do we get the proper reporting? And we continue to work on that. We're working now with a company called Casted that is giving us actionable data that we've really never had before on you know, the numbers of listening and what matters and where they're listening and how long, et cetera, those kinds of things, and in much more detail than I can probably describe to you. But it has been a journey sort of creating that environment where the podcaster who just wants to do the podcast, the writer who just wants to write, will hire someone else to do the cover of the book, will hire someone else to do the uploading or do the formatting, if you will. And that's what we're doing for our clients, is trying to create a good environment. We have a whole office that looks really nice when you come in, and they're proud to bring their clients in. It's not what I started out in 11 years ago, which was a round Formica table in a studio that was not soundproofed. So everybody on either side of me at launch workplaces could hear every word. I could hear when their phones rang. I finally insulated one wall, but I could still hear the conversations through the other wall. And that was 8, 9 years ago. And they want to come into a studio where they feel it's a studio. My father taught me when I worked with him many years ago about the sense of arrival. And if you show up someplace and it looks the part, then you will feel immediately comfortable. If you showed up here and it looked like a cubicle, which is what it did in the beginning, and I left my door open all the time, so people would say, huh, what are you doing in here? You don't look like everybody else. So it's a bunch of those things. And real quick, I wanted to get back to the name. We went from Podcast Village to Podville Media. because at that time it had already transitioned to so much video work that just keeping the name podcast sort of was not as powerful as we wanted, because we were doing more than just podcasting. So Podville Media has been a great name for us, and part of that story that I just told about sort of the sense of arrival, you know.
And thanks for sharing that, Charlie. It's so good to hear that. And it's interesting when you mentioned video earlier, and you were talking around that sort of, you know, maybe half the people who are listening in inverted commas to podcasts today are actually watching a video stream, or half watching it and just listening.
Or half
to
watching. Very well said. Yeah.
Spotify, you can upload lots of different platforms, Amazon to some degree. We've, at the time of recording, we've got Google Podcasts going away, and YouTube trying to do something every other day with their YouTube music and their podcasts on YouTube playlists and stuff. So who knows where we'll end up? But I just wanted to ask you about video. Do you think it's essential today to have video in the podcast? Have the days of just recording audio gone, or is there still a place for good audio?
To answer quickly, I think there's still a good place for audio, because we're still exercising, walking our dogs, cooking, driving, sorting things at the same time, going through our desks, etc. I'm a little old school, but I absolutely think there's a place for pure audio still. And we have clients that still do pure audio. And I don't really think that will go away. I must admit to being somewhat surprised as to how we've gotten to 50% of consumption through video. I know from some of the things I was doing before podcasting, I knew that video was going to be important for all businesses, period, and that we weren't going to get our way around it. But I have to tell you, my personal opinion is that the pure audio will never go away. And I think that's because we can exercise, et cetera. Now, I guess you could exercise and watch a video, but and there's plenty of TVs in gyms and fitness centers to prove my point. However, I think that pure audio will not go away. I think that we will see and continue to see an increase in video and audio for podcasting. But I have some clients who just don't need it. We have some clients who just don't need it. And they don't want to go to that additional expense, if you'll forgive me for saying that. They feel their mission is accomplished by encouraging people to listen. So I'm a little old school. If I could have stayed all audio, Simon, I would have. It was a simpler world and I understood it. I can't really edit video. I did it in the beginning, but it was too hard to teach me how to do that. There was so much there to learn that I had to make my first hire. Sarah Fernandez, if she ever hears this, I miss you. And she's gone on to other things. But I loved working with her because she had learned in college how to edit video, and I could watch her fingers fly across the keyboard for those early edits that we were doing together in that little studio. I do think there will be a place. I think there will always be a place for pure audio, and always be clients for pure audio.
Yeah, thanks, Charlie. And obviously the media side of Podville Media now, it's more than audio and video. It's this whole wrap of assets now, isn't it? The brand, they need, as you say, they need that TikTok or YouTube short. They need the asset. They need the clip, the snippet. Do you find that your clients come to you today with a fully formed idea, or is there an element of consultancy required because they're not quite sure what they need? They just want to get into it. What is it like at the moment?
Well, okay, I'll try to be a little brief. The client sometimes comes with a fully formed idea, yes. However, I would say that it always benefits some form of consultancy on the idea, because we've been doing this for 10 years and the client doesn't always know exactly how that pans out, how that works. So it will be refined. Some clients come with a germ of an idea and we help them fill that out. And that can take, oh gosh, a couple of hours, 4 hours to really get to that point and make the client understand what those goals really are. Because sometimes the client's goals change as we have these discussions and talk about what the repercussions of the show and the audience will want. So as I say in the Tao of Podcasting, let's not forget to think about this from the audience's point of view and how to engage that audience, how to make, as I say, a cocktail for the ear, an oral experience for you to understand and to engage. And, you know, that's what we're really looking for, truly engaged listeners, right? So some of the ideas need to be altered, some of the thoughts and ways of doing that. If someone wants to do an hour and a half long podcast, I'm going to say, well, that's great. And I like listening to long form podcasts, but I also like short. And I also think the audience wants about 23 minutes, 25 minutes to listen to power on through. And let's make that a, you know, a three-part show. So I think that that most of the time, even a fully formed idea gets a little further baked when we come and we really talk about, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to build it. Let's think about this. So most of the ideas get a little bit evolved, if that makes sense.
And the last question on this topic, Charlie, I'd be fascinated on your view on this. Is the reason that brands more and more are getting into podcasting, is it to drive awareness? Is it to sell more stuff? Is it to, you know, beat their competitors? What's actually driving this demand from your perspective?
Well, I'll tell you a little sort of a vignette that I say quite often. It's 11 years ago, I had to spend the most of my time explaining to people what this thing is they call a podcast. Now, I still have to explain it to my 94-year-old mother because she continues to forget what a podcast is. But as a quick parable, she used to do recording for the blind and dyslexic when I was a teenager. I was so proud that my mother was doing volunteer work. And she was reading text, and she even engineered sessions. I have no idea how my mother did that, but this was probably on reel-to-reel tape, Simon. I don't even know. And that probably was the germ of my podcasting in a way. She was doing recording for textbooks for blind people. To finish my thought, I used to say what this thing, a podcast, is. Now today I say, why aren't you podcasting? Because I think within and without all organizations, all conferences, all councils, all bodies of interest, that there is an absolute need for communication. And the advantage we get from podcasting, whether you do it in with an app on your phone or with a full-fledged studio, which obviously I suggest because the sound quality is better, the production quality is better, and your attention is more focused on your topic instead of on how do I make this construction noise go away, is this is a way we can tell our stories. This is a way we can share things that simply didn't exist. This is cave paintings brought forward. This is communication. That's why I changed my social media hashtag from Tao of Podcasting, because not everybody knows what Taoism is, to philosophy of podcasting, and it's philosophy of media, philosophy of communication, because we're really talking about the roots of getting what I'm thinking across to you. And that form didn't exist. 10 years ago, we didn't have Slack. We didn't really understand Twitter. I remember going to a friend saying, can you explain to me Twitter? And or X, or whatever we need to call it now. And I sort of think we're cycling out of that because of the push of real video, streaming video, video and podcast, video and audio. So I think I don't understand personally today why more companies, individuals, interest groups, and the like aren't using podcast, because you can get in at various price points and you can share your ideas. Not everyone is going to be the Joe Rogan show. That's just the one we talk about the most because it's probably the most profitable or the most well-known. But why aren't you using it to talk inside and outside your company? And I may get back to that at the end here, but it seems to me I'm constantly surprised why people aren't. Now, at the Sounds Profitable gang, they talk about the amount of people who aren't listeners and probably won't convert to listeners. And I think that's something for all of us inside the industry to think about. And I hope that's what the Tao of Podcasting can do to the casual reader who might pick it up and say, huh, we need to think about why we're not listening and what we can benefit. I've got a diehard friend who won't listen, although I did 6 episodes for him. Quick story, Simon. He came to me 10 or 9 years ago. He said, what are you doing wasting your time? He came into the studio. He said, I put headphones on him and we sat down across that round Formica table and talked for 20 minutes. And he said, I downloaded that in the computer, downloaded it onto SoundCloud at the time and hit the private key because we were talking about old stories that are better left unknown, and then made him listen to it from the internet, to which he said, I get it. I want six. We then proceeded to do six interviews. They're very evergreen with six of his best clients. He didn't put it on Libsyn. He didn't care about that. He loaded them straight into his website. And this is a real dinosaur of a guy. And they live on his website. On the front page, it says, click here for my podcast. He still gets comments to this day of people who are impressed to see that he has a podcast. And sometimes they actually listen to them all. He had someone just a month ago say, I listened to all your podcasts. I was so impressed. Does he care about the numbers? No. What does it do? It opens a door for him to show his clients that he's done something that's current, if that makes sense to you. So I hope that answers a little bit.
It certainly does. And I love the point that you're making there, because, you know, it's not that it's a niche. It's there's a reason behind everything. And sometimes you don't realize what that is until you're actually in motion. But for that person, that works particularly well. For another brand, it may be something else entirely.
Right.
I like the answer. Thanks for sharing that insight, Charlie. Now, look, you've kind of hinted at the fact that you've got some moves going on. You know, you've got a new studio on the horizon.
Right.
What does the next 6 to 12 months look like for your business? How do you go about planning? What's on your horizon and your roadmap?
Well, we're partnering with a local 30 years into it studio, television studio that does contract work for a lot of government interviews, etc. And they have no foothold into the podcasting business. So this is a marriage of win-win. They would like to do podcasting, but they have something that we can't afford. They have a fully articulated, they have two of them actually, video walls. And if you've ever looked into it, it's incredibly expensive. And it's not even as simple as what we do here. We basically have a full studio. We just don't have a full television studio. Excuse me, Simon. We just don't have a video wall. We looked at it and I said no. But now we will move in. We have moved in. We've already done production for the Dominique Foxworth show. Dominique's a former Baltimore Raven and sort of the godfather of Podville Media, because he suggested to my partner when he had a little one-room studio in the back of a title company, he said, you can make a business out of this. And that's why Oscar went to business school, and that's why we met. And so we're upping our game significantly in terms of video ability. We're moving geographically because we think, to be honest with you, sometimes because of the non-return to work that I referred to earlier, people aren't willing to come to downtown Washington. I worked here for many years on Farragut Square in D.C. and was thrilled to come back, but it's a different landscape. There's just no way around it. People are kind of returning a little bit to work, but the advantage of our new location, which will be in Montgomery County outside of Washington, D.C., will be that we will have a new area for people to come to that's less trafficy, that's simpler, and we have certain clients that we know will come to that studio who basically say, I'll never come downtown. But we'll still have this foothold with this partner in the downtown area. We may even have a third location later this year. There's been so much overbuilding of space, and then coronavirus started, that there's a few locations that are just dying to get some action. So I think the play is to continue to understand video and use it to its fullest extent. We're certainly using artificial intelligence for as much as we possibly can. I use it mostly to bounce ideas back and forth, because I'm always coming up with a new crazy idea in our industry and outside of our industry. And I enjoy it being a sounding board and giving me feedback. And I might say, well, I'd never do that, or I'd do this, and that's interesting, and asking ChatGPT for questions. And it's a great ideation tool for me, but we're using it for jump cut edits, for all sorts of things in our daily technical production work as much as possible. And that, as you might know already, obviously, it allows our editors to do higher higher quality work and work at a higher scale. We're not downsizing. We are letting some of our people do more work from home. It just makes sense. And as long as we've learned and we have how to manage that appropriately, I'm an old school guy. I wish everybody was here every day. And I like coming into the office, but it's just not as necessary as it was. And it's more efficient. Many people work more efficiently from home. One of our main administrators, who's really, I couldn't do without her, she said, I won't work for you if I have to come in every day. I simply won't. So it makes so much sense. And we have to change. We've pivoted so many times. I've pivoted, Oscar and I have pivoted so many times from the beginning that I can't even remember them all now. But we have to use AI. We have to learn what our clients want and how we can grow in that paradigm is what we will always be trying to listen. That's part of being a chief listening officer. That's part of why Oscar looks at TikTok and sends me ones in the middle of the night. He said, here's something we ought to look about. We're always trying to anticipate as much as we can what the next trend will be. To get back to the social media assets, the first day that Instagram stories came out, we were producing a show for former Washington football team player Santana Moss, and we produced stories that afternoon because we need to be responsive to what the public is following and what the next trends are. I don't know what the fate of TikTok will be here in the States. I don't even fully understand how they can pass that legislation, but if it does happen, we'll have to change and morph. I think today's most commonly consumed form of content might just be the YouTube short for today.
Yeah, interesting.
But I don't know that it will be the YouTube short. It might be the YouTube long. It might be the next thing. But we have to keep our ear to the ground and understand what the client needs and wants. Now, the client doesn't always know what the client needs and wants, as we touched on earlier, but it's a partnership, right? We're not working to just go and do your job and move on and not work with you. We would like to have partners for life. And some of them have been with us. Gosh, Ann Pasmanic has been with us since the very beginning of our Glover Park studio and has produced hundreds and hundreds of episodes of her show. It's called The Power Station. It's about community involvement, community understanding. And I've learned so much from that show. So we like to have partners that, you know, we keep forever if possible.
Well, it's so great. And what a great testament to have partners that are with you that length of time. I mean, that speaks volumes in itself. But also, what an exciting time, isn't it? I know it changes and I know it morphs.
It sure does. Yeah.
But what an exciting time. And this new sort of adventure that you're on now and this new sort of partnership approach that you're doing and this huge, you know, television aspect, video aspect to the business now. I mean, it really is fantastic, you know, from where you were maybe 10, 11 years ago.
Oh, my gosh. It's unrecognizable.
Yeah. Are you still getting time to pick up the mandolin from time to time? Is that still happening?
I do. I play in a jug band and I play with a partner in Annapolis. I just don't get out there very often. I've got one on the wall here, Simon. You know, I learned how to play the mandolin because no one needed another guitar player. And I simply Googled 2-finger mandolin chords. And because I could play the guitar, I really wanted to play with this guy I met in Annapolis, and he played at little bars around town. That's about an hour away from here. And at the time I was working in a suburb of Annapolis called Edgewater, and I Googled 2-finger mandolin chords and printed out a piece of paper. And I knew what a G, a C, and a D was on the guitar, so it was easy for me to follow along. But if you follow me or my TikTok, Philosophy of Podcasting, sometimes on Fridays, I will post some of our music, and it's a lot of fun. Jerry and I have been playing together for, I don't know, more than 10 years. And so we know how to end a song at the same time. There's not enough time, to be honest with you. I thought naively in podcasting, I'd have all this extra time to play music with my friend Jerry and the jug band. And there really isn't any extra time to play at all. But it does happen. And you're very kind to ask about it. Yeah, it's an important part of my life. I learned
Charlie
to play guitar from my dad. So
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. And look, talking about time, before we run out of time,
okay,
is there anything else that you'd like to share share, maybe re-emphasize, or anything maybe we haven't touched on that you'd like to share with our worldwide audience? And secondly, and really importantly, if people want to get the book, find out more about Podville Media, connect
you're so kind.
With the chief listening officer, where do you want to point people to?
Well, Podville Media is simply Podville, P-O-D-V-I-L-L-E, Media, M-E-D-I-A.com. And that's how to find us. We need to rebuild the website again. We've had 5 websites since I started, and it's a never-ending thing. Just makes me roll my eyes just because we've done it so many times. And I wish we didn't have to. Podville Media is how to find us. Look at some of our clients if you drag down to the bottom and take a quick look at us, although we've evolved quite a lot since we did build that, which is probably 3 or 4 years ago now. Good heavens, Simon. You can find me on Instagram, Charlie Burney, C-H-A-R-L-I-E. I think I just hit 1,000 followers. My God, I don't know why we care about these numbers, because maybe it's 999 right now. There's a few bots in there, I'm pretty sure, Simon. On TikTok and Instagram, I post my illustrations and my thoughts about the philosophy of podcasting and media under the name Philosophy of Podcasting. I'd love to get a few more followers there. I try to post very regularly on those platforms, passages from the book and some of the musings and thoughts that I have. So those are the two places to follow what we're doing. There is a Podville Media Instagram account. We don't post from there very often because we're really not prospecting too much. We're on those forms mostly, as it was in the beginning when I was a one-man show, to support our clients. And so if our clients are out there posting, we want to like it and encourage them to continue to push their media, because that's the really important part. And we could talk for an hour about how to promote the client's media and how the client should promote their own media. But I did want to touch on one thing for your first question, Simon, that we haven't had a chance to talk about. And that is something that I am talking about on LinkedIn, and I will be doing a series on Philosophy of Podcasting in Instagram and on TikTok, what I call the inward facing podcast. Now, we all know instantly probably what that is, and you've nodded your head, and I did many of them in the beginning. I have a few examples. I've already given you one, actually. My friend with the 6 podcasts, he wasn't trying to So the external facing podcast is generally trying to do 2 things. And Joe Rogan is one of these. They're trying to grow the show and they're trying to monetize, right? And that's, I forgot that when you make the peace sign, the balloons come up. 2 thumbs up, it's fireworks, right? And even in the beginning, I was doing internal facing podcasts. The launch podcast for the co-working center, we're not trying to grow, we're not trying to monetize. I was doing it as a gift at no charge for the co-working center so they could have content for their digital newsletter. We do clients today that are working on internal facing podcasts. We just don't talk about it very much. I know that a great many of the podcast influencers talk about growing the show. I follow a podcast called Grow the Show and monetization, and certainly the Sounds Profitable Group, which is a wonderful show and a wonderful resource for our industry. They talk about how to monetize your podcast almost exclusively, and trends and the infinite dial, et cetera. But what we don't talk about is the IFP, the inward-facing podcast. So I'm trying to stand on a wooden box and talk about that a little more, because I think, getting back to something we said earlier, why aren't all companies and institutions, collections, interest groups using podcasting? I think there's something that's not really acknowledged. When I made a post about this about a month ago on LinkedIn, I had, for me, quite a large response. People said, I never thought about that. And people said, what do you mean? And I'm even having a meeting today where Mark and I are talking about doing sort of a Zoominar for his client base, talking about inward-facing podcasts. I'm preparing a little 5-page digital handout about it. What do I mean? These are the shows that are just meant for communicating within a group, within an organization, just for the purposes of creating better harmony, better knowledge, better communicating of ideas. Case in point, there's a ride-sharing company that you all know. I'll just leave their name out of it so I won't get in trouble. They came to us in Glover Park, my second office, and they wanted to rent our studio one afternoon to do a show. They'd had some meetings on Capitol Hill, and they wanted to create a program to talk to their drivers about the nomenclature that they wanted to use, about some of the ways that they need to know about their clients. So they do a show, not for you and not for me as writers, but for the drivers. Now, that audience might grow, obviously, when you have more drivers, but they're not worried about growth and or monetization. They're just trying to communicate within an organization. There are a lot of examples of this, not to mention my friend with the Six podcast on his website. But I recently had about an hour and a half meeting with a friend of mine who works in Switzerland with an international organization that deals with refugees. She's trying to provide an alternative to the 20-plus page white paper, which is what they disseminate. It is very proprietary. It is not meant to go out to the public at all. But what would be better than offering a choice, Simon, instead of here's the 20-plus page, 40-plus page paper, let's offer them a choice. Here's the paper. We also have this in three 15-minute episodes where Charlie and Simon talk about it and explain what's going on. So then you've given your captive group a choice of reading, which many of them may still want to do. There's no problem with that, printing it out, taking notes, or listening as they're driving, as they're cooking, as they're working out. So I don't see why more organizations aren't using podcasting, not necessarily video podcasting in this case, but podcasting, voice podcasting for communication within an organization. We already have the ways to disseminate this, let's just say Slack or other ways of communicating whatever you're doing within the organization that make it very easy to send out that material. I did a video series at my old job. I was running their philanthropy arm, and every time someone really did a lot of community work, I would do a 3 or 4 minute video of that person talking about their grant work. And I would just disseminate that inside the organization. Now, if you watched it outside, that was fine. It wasn't proprietary or hidden, but it was for the other people in that group, which had 5 locations and a couple hundred employees, to see what this person had done, hopefully encourage other people to do community good works. So I think there's a lot of room for communicating within organizations with what I'm calling and preparing to do a short series on called Internal Facing Podcasts as a way to communicate clearly and offer the alternative to long form documents, et cetera. I hope I've described that correctly.
I really like it. I love it. In fact, I think it's so interesting. I was talking to a lady in the Asia Pacific area of the world who was talking about indie podcasts and how there is so much good quality content, but maybe doesn't, you know, you mentioned the Joe Rogans of the huge things out there. And then there are, you know, you mentioned Brian and Sounds Profitable and Pat yep. Flynn, and there's some yep. really great people in the industry. But this inward, you know, facing podcast that has a particular requirement, it fills a particular need. It's a direct communication for a particular audience and a particular requirement. I think that's really, really fascinating. So thanks very much for sharing that, Charlie.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I really enjoy talking about it because I've been doing it for a while. Real quick, another anecdote, which is kind of ironic at the end. One of the guys walking past my door in Gaithersburg at that first office looked in and said, "Hey, what are you doing in here?" And he proceeded to, I told him, and then he proceeded to tell me, you know, I'm doing a newsletter for my clients. He sort of runs a business therapy practice. And I'm being told I need to write a blog every week. And it's really a pain to do this every week. And I said, well, why don't you come in here and we'll just shoot the breeze and you can make it about whatever you want, but you don't have to write it down and we'll turn that into a podcast and you can just jam that into your newsletter. And we did that for about 2 years and he would come in and we had a ball. He would say, I just went to see a Bruce Springsteen concert last night, but it made me think this about that. And he would feather that into his business therapy consultation. And it was a wonderful show. But the irony of this when talking about internal facing podcasts, so this was just meant for his newsletter group, right? He came into my office one day and said, why don't I have 10,000 downloads? And this was still many years ago before I even partnered with Oscar. And I said to him, and I took a moment, I thought, calm down, Charlie. I said, look, Jeff, do you ever know how many people read your blog in the first place? Because I'm not sure it was in the hundreds. And tried to make him understand that this was, I didn't even know the expression then, an internal facing podcast, and not necessarily meant to grow. But it was an easy thing. You know, it illustrates the point that we all think about the success stories. We need to think about how to use tools for our own purposes. Dad always said the right tool for the right job. And I think that still makes sense in a world that he no longer would recognize. But using podcasting inside a group, especially just podcasts that we listen to, I think is a very valuable tool, very accessible. Obviously, we want to do them all for you at Podville Media and encourage you to do them in a high professional caliber, even if you can't. I don't like the podcasts that sound like they're being done in a kitchen. I really don't. There's no excuse for it anymore, frankly, but they're out there, right? And I don't, you know, I think there's just a whole lot of merit in thinking about using this tool. And I don't quite understand why it's not more widely used and acknowledged. So that's the soapbox that I intend to get on for a little while. So.
Very good. Well, look, that brings us lovely to the end of our discussion today, Charlie. It's a really exciting year ahead by the sound of it. We've got a heck of a lot going on in the media space. In your area. I love the new inward-facing podcast approach. I shall be an avid reader and listener to that. So you can count me in for sure.
Right.
The other thing is I want to thank our audience, you know, people who've been watching you and I today, people who've been checking in on this episode.
Thank you so much.
Make sure that you like and follow and subscribe everything Charlie's doing over at Podville Media. Of course, we'd love you to do the same for the global discussion. And I hope that you'll catch up with me next time for some more discussions with great creatives, leaders, and thinkers, just like Charlie. Thank you, Charlie. It's been wonderful to talk to you. Wonderful.
You have a wonderful day and appreciate the opportunity.